This episode is powered by denmeditation.com. Though meditation is the primary focus, the bigger goal is for people to understand and love themselves, thus creating more harmony in the community at large. To find out more about Den Meditation's teacher training programs, retreats, and all things Den Meditation, go to denmeditation.com. Welcome to Den Talks Podcast. This is Tal, your host and the founder of Den Meditation. Our guest today is really great. I think you're going to love him. His name is Noah Ayan. His actual name is Pavel. He's from the Czech Republic. His story is really incredible. This is a guy who grew up. I like that he talks about, you know, post-communism, but actually had a mom who was like teaching him yoga and meditation. So it's always been in his blood, but he became an insane entrepreneur from the age of 18. He was doing businesses that didn't even exist, making a lot of money. He convinced people to let him franchise an Orange Theory. And next thing you know, he had so many all across the country. He was flying private jets, but he just realized he was depressed. Things were wrong. He wasn't feeling happy. So he came up with this idea that once a month he was going to do something extraordinary. And we talk about it on this podcast, after going into a dark room for 10 days with no food, no nothing, he had all of these insane self-realizations and he changed his life. But it's all about service and it's all about teaching others to empower themselves and how to realize who they are and what it is they truly need to do. He does everything from music and produces music. He's a breathwork instructor. You know, Noah means movement and Aeon means all or none. So he also teaches movement. So I really suggest just taking the time. He has lovely stories. He has so many amazing pieces of advice and he's just a joy to listen to. I know stuff that I'm taking from this episode immediately because some of it, like I said, is so simple. So enjoy. Let us know what you think. Please subscribe. Enjoy the episode. I mean, I want to talk about your story because your story is amazing. I mean, how much you've accomplished in your life is insane. May I ask how old you are?
32.
Oh my God, you're still a baby. It's like, honestly, from everything you've done, you feel like you should be in your 70s at this point, if not older. So that's crazy. You're still a baby. And what I was going to say, not only have you accomplished so much, how you've shifted in the areas you accomplish it in is pretty impressive too. So I do want to chat about that because, you know, I've mentioned a lot on this podcast recently in the last like handful of months that I feel like there's a percolation of energy where people really are feeling the need to switch or change what it is they're doing, even if it's someone already in, let's say, the spiritual space. So it's not even like, oh, leave your corporate job and become spiritual. It's not even that black and white anymore. Like, I feel like a lot of people I know, even in the spiritual space, are feeling all of a sudden this like, huh, I'm supposed to be doing something else. Like whether it's something that's more reminiscent of their old life or a different avenue within this world. So I feel like you're such an interesting human to speak about that because you have pivoted so many times, but not out of necessity, out of really reconnecting with yourself and following some intuition. And it sounds like, and then I'll let you speak because I know I'm babbling right now. It sounds like even when you came from a very lucrative kind of more corporate version, even though you were never corporate, but like in the corporate world, you know, businesses and entrepreneur, it still sounds like you are very connected to your intuition because it might not have always brought you to like a soulful place, but it feels like you were very connected. So chat a little bit, and I still can't believe you're 32. That's insane. So I can't wait to learn from you too. So,
well, I have so much to say about this to be honest, because I think what we're seeing in this world is, you know, this massive shift and, you know, people call it awakening or unifying. I mean, there's many different labels, but what it really means to me is, you know, everybody is questioning, right? There's these inner whispers that continuously are realigning, reconnecting, and rethinking who we are. And we are spiritual beings living a physical experience. And that physical experience, that embodiment is, you know, for most of us being questioned. And so it's again, you know, I don't see spirituality as like one path. Like that is the path of everything. And whatever we decide to be a barber or we decide to, you know, be a spiritual teacher, it really matters not, because it's the being that we're becoming through that experience. And we can learn through the gutter, right? We can learn through the painful experiences, fear and anxiety, or we can learn through love and joy. And, you know, I've been on this journey through self-transformation because of these questions, because of constant questioning everything and everyone. And I've been an avid seeker of truth because the minute that something is being, you know, projected at us by our society, by our families, by our friends, you know, is that really in who we want to be and how do we want to experience this life? And so life is made up of choices and consequences. Mm-hmm. And the issue we're seeing is that the consequences have delay. And sometimes we don't directly tie the choices into the consequences, which makes us be confused, sometimes blindsided, and we think that life is not going in a perfect way. But what starts happening is when we zoom out and when we start going deeper within into that slower, subtle frequencies, which obviously meditation, breathwork, and all of these modalities help, then all of a sudden we start being clearer and clearer. And I've learned this from the psychics in Brazil when I spent a month there many years ago, that essentially we've got 5 physical senses and 4 spiritual gifts or psychic senses. Now, these senses are becoming more and more prominent because of this awakening state we're in. The first one is your inner hearing, and those are the whispers. You know, this is the little voice that's telling you at night, you know, stop watching Netflix. Is this the job that I'm doing currently really working out for me? Quit drinking alcohol or start working out. And that whisper has always our back. But the issue is it can be very, very silent at first. And to separate this whisper from the monkey brain, right? We've got the egoic mind that is there to protect us, that helps us project from the past into the future. It can sometimes have an agenda that we think that that's what our true, you know, path is. But when we start tuning into this whisper, the way we strengthen it is we simply acknowledge it. So thank you, I heard that. And then the magic word is, what you gonna do about that? And what's gonna happen is when you start following this whisper, it becomes louder and louder until it literally integrates with the egoic mind or the monkey brain that we have. And, you know, for me, when I went in there, I was a busy entrepreneur. You know, I had an open mind and open heart, but I didn't really believe in this until I start hearing this voice louder and louder, you know, in my favor. Now, let's say that you avoid this voice for long enough time. That's when we get in trouble. That's when we're unhappy. We're not sure what are we doing with life. Do we feel purpose? Maybe we get sick. And I never wanted to go that far. So that's why I start paying attention to this voice, because I wanted to be aligned. Then we've got our inner seeing, which is the visions. Some people have a really strong lucid dreaming. Other people, like visionaries, entrepreneurs, right? They have an idea that's maybe a year from now, and then they write it into a deck that then becomes, you know, the reference into their path. And same thing. Thank you. I saw that. What you gonna do about that? Then we've got an inner feeling, which comes from the solar plexus extending into your hands. And this is the traditional empaths of the world, or, you know, Reiki healing, pranic healing is all based on this, you know, empathic feeling. And this is when you walk into a room and let's say there was a fight in the room, something doesn't feel right, or you had a wrong feeling about a person, about a decision, it's in your body. And so same thing, when you feel it, see if you can question it, work with it and acknowledge it so you can strengthen it. The last one is your inner knowing or intuition. And what that is, this is when you knew you shouldn't have gotten to the party. You knew that that person was cheating on you. When you think, you don't know. When you know, you don't require to think. So that's how you best discern this. And again, you start building these, you know, 4 senses. And what happens is now you no longer require, you know, all of this thinking. You no longer require this questioning, because it keeps on coming to you. And when you start listening to it, it goes into the action. And so that's the being, doing, and having paradigm that for a long time I didn't truly embody until I finally, you know, got it through practicing this.
So what happens, and I'm sure you get this a lot from people and from clients, It's that if you know, like you have the knowing, you hear it, you know what you're supposed to do, but for some reason, you just can't do it. Like you have some blocks that are just either preventing you from making it into a habit or preventing you from getting it going. Like, what do you feel like from, because I agree when you can start listening to those whispers or the knowingness. I mean, and I can tell you some crazy knowing stories. The hard thing about the knowing one, I think, is, or any of them really, is sometimes you know stuff you're not supposed to know. And then it's like, I remember this happened to me when I was younger a bunch, like just knowing things. And I'm like, I can't tell that person that because if I'm wrong, that is a big deal. And if I'm wrong, I'm setting off a wildfire of shit. And so like, and there's no reason for me to think I'm right, except I just know. You know what I mean? And it's fascinating. Then of course, what happened like 8 months later, I was right. And it's, but I couldn't have said anything earlier because it would have been like a disaster in the family. But anyway, What do you do with people? What advice or what do you tell people when it's like, there's clearly like some block that prevents them from kind of stepping into their higher version of themselves?
Well, the only block there is our trust within those senses. And so we're not taught to trust these senses. And what we're taught to in this world is this chronic use of our 5 physical senses, right? And that is the constant dopamine search, right? And it could be sugar, it could be negative mind, negative emotions, negative relationships. We constantly are putting ourselves through these decisions to hurt so that way we can wake up from it and re-see it into the lightness or the higher version of these experiences. Now, what's really important to discern in this process, especially at the beginning, is, well, first thing first is building your trust with it. Because, you know, at first I didn't trust this either, right? So there was this like, is this for real? Is this, you know, are these senses real? Can we all be psychics? And, you know, the answer is yes, we all are psychics. We all have these abilities as a birthright to be. But just like when we are sending a mail, right? So let's say that you go into a U.S. postal, you put an address and you trust that it will get there, right? It's like you submit it and then you trust that it will get there when you send it. Now, the same way it works with our thoughts, with our words, with our actions, with all of these ideas, we have to submit them, right, into the universe or the field of the quantum realms of existence. And then we got to demand them. So kind of like an enter. You know, when we hit an enter or say amen, right? It's like it serves as an enter into the submission. And then we just gotta let the things unfold and take the right steps, you know, to get there. Now, this does not work without you really realigning with what you want. Because a lot of people, you know, they think that, oh, I'll just let it on the universe to happen and unfold. Well, when we let things happen and unfold, you know, awesome surrender experience, but not really, because you're giving the control out to the external versus, you know, keeping the control inward. So that way you make the choices and consequences in your own hands. Now, for this, I practice something called the process of unhooking. Mm. And what I mean by this is if we don't unhook from the external world, if we don't spend time just with ourselves, so you can actually think, you know, what do you want to think into being, you are going to continuously be living somebody else's life, you know, somebody else's agenda, you know, whatever you work, whatever your families, whatever your loved ones are saying. So what I do is I once a day, first hour or two in the day, I completely spend with myself. I don't look at the cell phone. I go into breath work, meditation. I visualize the day and I just check in with myself with series of questions, because then I unhook from the world and I begin the day in my own terms. The second part is once a week, I take full day off where I detox physically, digitally. I mean, I retract completely inward, especially the first half of the day. Before then, I spend time with kids and families and loved ones. And again, it's to revisit the past week, see what was working, what wasn't working, what do you want to realign? Because we're kind of like the alchemists and druids, right, of our own life. Once a month, I take 4 days completely off. And again, fully off the digital world. Sometimes it's fully, you know, detoxing and fasting as well. And first half of it, spend with myself. Second half of it, invite, you know, family and friends. Once a year, I spend 10 days in darkness, which has become now, I'm going for the fifth time in March.
Wow.
And essentially, it's 10 days with no physical food, no light. And the first time I went was about 7 years ago. I changed my life 360. I completely, for the first time, touched myself for who I am, not for who I am not. And for the first time, I could hear, feel, see, you know, where I actually want to go and who I want to be and experience. The second and third and fourth time I went, it was just minor adjustments. So when you get on this cycle, you essentially start taking charge of every decision and thought and action that you're making. And you can start having a real life, you know, assessment. Is this working? Is it not? And the best way to discern if your life is working for you, you know, look outside of you. What are your relationships like? What is your monkey brain telling you? What are your emotions? What are what is your abundance, your health? I mean, it goes literally, it's a direct feedback that we're receiving. And any of these things that might be anyhow not working for the greatest good of yours, it's time to look in. It's time to bring it up to the surface and work with it. And that's the beauty about this life, right? We have this constant opportunity to do this, but we don't think we are that powerful. We forgot that we can have literally an effect on every situation, every experience. And when we do this, when we take this charge, life shifts. And that's what happened for me.
So talk to me about that a little bit. So when you did darkness for the first time, and I have so many questions about that, but just you said, you know, you kind of found yourself for the first time and it was very clear who you were versus who you are not. Can you talk about what that meant for you? Like what came up for you that you weren't necessarily embracing before?
Yeah, absolutely. So I walked in there. Back then, I was opening Orange Theory fitness locations all over the country. And, you know, I was a busy entrepreneur working on the next big thing and thinking that, you know, I'll have thousands of stores and whatever that part of me was. But I was unhappy. I was burned out. I had mild depression. I couldn't sleep. And I, even though I checklist, you know, everything from the American dream, I, you know, continued to have these deep questions. So what I did, I committed myself that every 3 months, I'm going to do something crazy, something that's going to shake off these patterns that will be out of my comfort zone. So that way I can, you know, truly move inward instead of outward. So darkroom was the perfect example. And so I walked in there, I gave out my cell phone and I was like, just please allow me to have rest. Now, the first few days were brutal. I mean, the monkey brain and the emotional attachment to food is way worse than it is your physical body. You know, it's actually the body is the easiest part about this. Now, to occupy my mind, what I did the first 4 days, I just went backward every 7 years of my life. And whatever I could remember, I just start replaying the situation. I start finding gift about the situation, whatever it was, good, bad. And then I start accepting the situation if I was holding on to something. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, I've hurt so many people. I've done so many bad decisions. I mean, I got it all wrong, you know, up to a very long time ago. Very short time ago. And essentially, I start, you know, feeling this release and I start activating this deeper part of me. Now, the next 3 or 4 days of the 10 days, I start projecting into future. And for the first time, or probably after a very long time in my life, I start dreaming again. And, you know, we need to be dreamers. We need to start thinking, you know, what do we want and how do we want it? And what do we want to experience? And so I allowed myself to start rethinking, what is my passion? And my passion always has been music and dancing and just, you know, experiencing this joy through music. So that was really clear. Learn how to produce music and go and start DJing in a solfeggio frequencies. So that literally came, you know, from that place. Then I rediscovered my purpose. And at that time, I've already done quite a bit of these crazy experiences, and I've learned a lot of tools. And so the message was, you know, you can either continue being in self-mastery and keep it all for yourself, or you can share it with others. And so my purpose became workshops, retreats, and these immersive experiences to help others and be in service of what I've learned. And then the final part was legacy. How do you make means and living with who you are becoming at this, you know, greatest version or vision you have about yourself? And that was the hardest part. So I walked out of the dark room, right, for the first time. And essentially, I start selling everything. I was like, I'm not interested in this world anymore. And I went into the second extreme, you know, where I went way too spiritual in a while. And it was nourishing. It was needed, but I went broke. So after I made millions of dollars with all of this, I lost everything. I got divorced. I literally.
I was going to ask, because the kids, when you told me how old they were, I was like, so you were already married with two kids when all this was happening.
Yep. No. And so it took me about 2 or 3 years after to finally, well, first of all, forgive myself, to accept myself, to become worthy that I can make means with doing good in the world, because this is such an important topic for all of the spiritual people, because so many spiritual people are broke. And that is not alignment. We came here to be wealthy and abundant on every single level. And so it took me a lot to really embody that. And, you know, now the path I'm on, I'm fully integrated with everything, with my passion, my purpose, my legacy. And it's been, you know, I have the most magical relationships. I have beautiful partner, kids. I mean, the truth is that it was a hard, you know, process to get to this, but now I'm learning through love. I'm learning through joy. I'm experiencing all of my lessons from this other level of being, which I never thought was possible. And it is possible.
I mean, that's really amazing. Can I ask a question? Like, when you do this dark room, and then I want to go back to more of the broader stuff, but because it's so funny, it reminds me of a big experience of like what floating is like when you float and it's all dark and you're just kind of suspended. But that's what, 3 hours versus you do this for 10 days, right?
Yep.
I mean, so are you in a room? Are you on solid ground? Like, is it a tiny room? Like what is it?
So it's in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, and it's with my mentor. Her name is Jas Muhin. She's a breatharian for the past 25 years. And so
she doesn't eat at all.
She doesn't eat at all. So one of the things that this dark room does, it's an initiation into pranic living. So you can tap into your inner source. And I actually became ambassador of peace under her program with being able to teach this. Mm-hmm. So you can lose the need to eat. And instead, you repattern this that you eat for pleasure, but you don't have to eat for the calories or for survival. And we can have this conversation.
It's amazing.
How it works. It's incredible. And again, I thought that this is ridiculous. It's so far out there for every little belief that I had at that time. But when it took me 2 weeks after the dark room to start reintroducing food, I was like, what? This is insane. I was not hungry.
So you went over 3 weeks without eating?
Almost. Well, this last time, a month, because I stopped already week before the dark room, and then went out of dark room, and it took me another 2 weeks after to basically start feeling hunger again. And, you know, we follow a strict process. It's an 8-point lifestyle that you follow, which lightens up your vibration, your frequency enough, so that way you're not bonded to the density of our mind, of our food. And essentially what usually happens is, and I found this beautiful balance now, you know, most of the food is liquid for me. I usually have a one meal per day. That's a fully nourishing. And then the rest of it, I with the amount of traveling and with the amount of stuff that I still do in the physical world, I find that to be a perfect, you know, balance for me. But it comes in a different place. This is not something you can decide with your mind, because when you do this, you can die. You know, you have to.
I was, I was about to say, let's do the disclaimer for people listening. This is not like a hunger strike thing. This is, it's because what you've really mastered the ability of getting your energetic system so heightened to a point that it's operating your entire body on its own. But I think that's an important distinction so people know this isn't just a fast.
Yes. And so many people do go in it with the ego. And this is really important. This calls you. Like, this is going to be a time in your life when you will keep on lightening and lightening your frequency, that it will just naturally happen.
So when you showed up the first time, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but to that point, when you show up the first time where you don't really know much yet, you haven't, like, you aren't where you are now in your life, was she concerned?
Not concerned. So here's, I'll give you an example. So basically, we do a series of testing, how to test your prana level all throughout. Mm. And, you know, no matter who you are, everybody is fed by prana. So prana is your source, energy, soul, God, universe. I mean, that's the original source vibration that gives us life into this physical form when we're born. And that will go back into the oneness when we die, right? So that's the split. I call it the ocean wave, part of the entire vast ocean, right? Now, this can be, you know, tested through muscle testing, intuition. You know, there's a variety of tests that she teaches us. And maybe you start, you know, 70-30. So 30% you are nourished by prana, 70% by physical, you know, substances. Now, throughout this experience or initiation, it becomes more like 50-50. Then it's like 80-20. And then when you fully convert into prana as a source, the way you notice, you actually start gaining weight instead of losing weight.
I was going to say, what's amazing, again, sorry to interrupt, is like when, you know, anyone who's watching this will see it, but anyone who's listening to this, you are not like an emaciated human by any means, because I've talked to those people who are on crazy fasts all the time and they're so skinny. Like, you look very healthy.
Thank you.
And I don't mean that in anything else. It's like you like you have full cheeks. Like, you don't look like, you know, everything's hanging. It's like so it is really interesting what you're saying. Sorry, keep going. So
I actually have a proof of this. And so basically, you know, as a biohacker, I also like to, you know, push the boundaries and limits and figure out what works, what doesn't, so that way I can bring it into the toolbox, right? And so with this, the first two or three times I have lost weight at the end of it, you know, every single time. And what that means, so let's say that I wasn't fully converted, let's say it's 90-10, right? So 10% you still need physical. That means that you're still fasting. And when you're fasting, you're losing weight. And so when you convert fully, and this happened to me the last time I went, for the first time I like really got it. I show people picture before and after. Every single person thinks my before is the one after. And because I've gained weight in 10 days of not eating any physical food. And so I was like, wow, this is crazy. So now it's actually not just in the mind. It's actually physically, you know, projected. And that's what happens. Your body know what perfect weight is. Your body know, you know, when you fully move into this free energy, right? This recycling of who and what we are, then it's a crazy, you know, mind hack.
So can I get a little weird for a sec? So, and for those who are just like, no, I want to have this basic, we'll get back to Orange Theory in a second, but now I want to get a little weird. So if you've mastered your energy and your prana to this point, like if you are on a daily basis, like you said, drinking, maybe you have one liquid meal a day. And clearly you're doing a lot of energy work for at least an hour or two a day, if not more. Okay. So have you yet like tapped into, I mean, I'm sure you've already been someone who like astro travels and all of that. Like, talk to me about some of, now that your body is so light, what are some of the crazier things you've been able to do?
You know, it's so funny. I never like talking about it so much because, no, it's okay. Because I see it a lot of times, it can go into the ego, right? And sometimes it can bring like you're special than another person. And what's really important disclosure, you know, for everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody is special in their own way, and there's nobody that's, you know, higher or lower. It's really just where we spend time and how we spend our energy is what will develop, right? So just like a gym, if you go to a gym, right, you can work out your muscles. They're going to gain over time, and the same way your psychic abilities will grow. Now, how do I run my life? I run my life completely on this psychic abilities. And you can, you know, ask our team with Noah Aeon in our place, because I lead everything by these hearings, feelings, and senses. So all of our business decisions, all of our things that we're meeting with, who we're coming with, I constantly use this in my life. And so, you know, have I had some wild experiences, like, you know, moving into nothingness and oneness and seeing, you know, things for what they are? You know, absolutely. It happens more and more frequently. But here's the deal. You know, what's the most important thing about these things is how do you use them? Because, you know, we could be tripping on ayahuasca, right, all day long. And I feel... This is what's happening with our society, right? Like ayahuasca, overuse of mushrooms and THC. Like, we're getting it all wrong because it's not for the fun things. It's not for the visuals and this, because what do we do with that, right? It's like, how do you embody that spiritual aspect?
Couldn't agree more. I say this all the time because I have a lot of my students who I love and adore who do ayahuasca a ton. And they were like, do you think that's a problem? Like, first of all, there's no problem. Everyone needs to do what they need to do. And I say, but I just ask you, just make sure you're actually processing, and instead of using it to get answers that you might probably be able to get yourself, that it's not becoming this crutch, like that you yourself can develop this internally too. Because you start to see everyone falls. I mean, look, I've even told a student before to stop chilling out on meditating for a little bit, which I know people would be surprised, but I started seeing this like desperation of almost like it's going to solve all my problems. That at one point I'm like, I hate, for you, my instinct is go outside and just live a little today. Like, just go be. You don't have to sit and do every workshop we provide. You don't have to do this. You don't even have to take my class today. Like, I think for you, you need to almost like get it. So I think that would surprise people, that would be the advice I'd give. But even I'm saying, no, you don't have to do my class today. Don't. Because I think you're getting too dependent and you're losing the sense of like, it's going to be okay by just being me. But keep talking. I totally am on board with all of this.
Yeah. Well, less is more, right? And and again, every single thing that you ever receive like this, how do you use it? How do you embody it? Because the reason why we're receiving this is not, you know, to have more fun with it. It's about how do you then apply it into your abundance, into your health, into your relationships. And so I think the wildest thing, and this might be interesting because I think a lot of people think of a Burning Man, for example, as something, you know, very spiritual and activating in a lot of ways. And, you know, so I went to Burning Man a couple of years ago, and I went into this deep transient state where I start seeing exactly how we're being controlled and how our consciousness is being sucked into this dark forces that are, you know, operating on our planet through the polarity. And so what I start seeing was these pathways of energy construct that basically holds the physical experience. And what I saw was extremely nasty. I literally saw all of the sex slavery, how we're using sex to basically feed this darkness, how we're using lie and deception in so many ways. And, you know, I literally left Burning Man. I was like, I cannot be in this energy. And I start using this in my everyday life, because I start seeing that deception everywhere. You know, for example, deception is in what you think is light. This is why you have to constantly ask and question everything and everyone, because what happens is there is so many people that they know how to speak spiritually. They know how the terms work, and they will, you know, it will be so appealing for your mind that like, wow, this is the one pill that I can take that's going to change my life forever. And the reality is, you know, you change your life forever, and you're giving this power and consciousness outward, extending it from, you know, your own preserves and reserves. And what happens is then, you know, you get on this wheel of in synchronicity in the wrong path that you might think it is on path. So deception was the biggest kind of root awakening that I found through it.
Talk about, you just said how you can get on the wheel of synchronicity. So talk about that a little bit, how you can get on a path that seems as if it's being supported, because I'm assuming that's what you mean by saying synchronicity is like, you're like, oh, I'm getting all the signs, I'm on the right path. So talk a little bit more about that. That's really fascinating.
So the way I received this vision, right? So essentially, if you think about how we're operating, if you simplify this, on three levels. There is the me, the individual consciousness, that is your physical body, mental body, emotional body, and your spiritual body. That's the things, decisions, or cycles that you can physically, you know, affect with your own hands or with your own being. Then you've got the we, which is the collective consciousness. This is how we kind of like, imagine if you were in a bubble and then you've got bubble of other 50 people, you become that, you know, you connect into that bubble of that 50 people. And that's the collective frequency that you, you know, operate on. This could be your friendships, your neighbors, your loved ones. It's a collective group. The we, I also break down into relationships and into environment, because also the outside world affects the inside world. And that is the air that you breathe, food that you eat, clothes that you wear, you know, everything around you. Now, that's the we collective. And then we are all, if you zoom out even further, we're part of this supra collective consciousness, which is the be or the essence. And this is, you know, if we know universe was created 13.5 billion years ago, you know, we're, how did we get here, right? We're such a little dot or drop of a pin on this vast, you know, ocean. And so that is the macro cycles, right? So we live on the micro cycles and macro cycles. Now, when it comes to the law of synchronicity, we essentially throughout the life, we are receiving frequencies and we're sending frequencies and vibration. And as we raise our vibration, we kind of outgrow these friendships, these people, and these circles. Now, sometimes, let's say that you get part of a cult, right? Something that will tell you all of the most beautiful things and you're going to become rich and famous and so forth. You know, a lot of secret societies nowadays, they used to be led by love, and it was something to keep, you know, for a limited amount of people as a great spiritual, you know, opportunity to grow. But it's been infiltrated by this darkness. So now it's kept us even further in a darkness. And that's the decision, right? I always ask, does this come from a place of love or does this come from a place of fear? And so if you just break down all of this synchronicity into just two paths, there's, you know, love or there's fear, pain, anxiety, and beyond, right? So any of these cycles or places that you connect to, they will either be on this frequency, which love is the path, right? Love is all there is. This is what we're here for. This is what we're here to spread and share. Or it will be the opposite. And eventually you're going to start finding out something is iffy, something is weird, something that they were saying is just not adding up. And that inner, you know, your inner senses will start telling you this. But sometimes we get so far down this line that we can't even get out of it. And that's what, you know, that's when cults burst, or that's when, you know, negative patterns show up.
So I think it's so interesting also with what, one of the things I've been struggling a little bit with, and we won't go into details because everyone has their own strong opinions about with what's happening kind of in the world right now, globally, is I have found, and it's like, I can feel it in my heart, this idea of holding a truth, and I say, I should put it in quotes, a truth that people so strongly believe in, not always understanding it at all, without trying to, like you said, take a step back and question and ask bigger. I don't know. I find there's very rarely a truth that just has one straight thing. I find most truths are surrounded by a lot of truths around it. The good and the bad and the ugly, right? Depending on how you react to it, obviously, because you put that on it. But it's rarely just that one thing you feel. It usually encompasses a little bit more of what other people are thinking too. You know what I mean? It just feels bigger and broader, if that makes sense. I know I'm babbling a little bit because I'm trying to keep things slightly broad. But from what you're saying, it almost, I feel like it's like people are, it's just this narrow path. And it's easy, no matter what path that is, to find things that support what you believe in when you want to. And it is harder sometimes to stay in, I think, it, more of the discomfort of, as a human, I should say, the physical part of the discomfort. Because yes, if you can rise high enough energetically, you just probably see it in a very different way. But physically stay in the discomfort of where all the truths kind of become one. Does that make sense what I'm saying a little bit?
Well, so when it comes to truth, right? So what we have to really strongly discern is the truth in our monkey brain or mind is only dependent on the past and projecting into the future. So it's a limited truth of our own agendas, right? That there's nothing wrong with it, right? Like there is a certain habits and thoughts that you're going to have throughout the life through which you're going to learn. So that way you keep on going higher. So there is no bad path, right? Eventually, because however you're learning from, if it's that fear, pain, and limited information, you're going to eventually realize like, this is not how I want to learn. Just like for me, and then I want to learn from the limitless source of information. Now, what is truth is always truth. Lie comes and goes. And what I mean by this, there is a certain universal truth that have always been around. That's the operating system we're part of. And then there is fads. For example, you know, like in the 70s or 80s, they were this whole fad about eating six times a day, you know, all carbs, all sugar, you know, that was all made up by the food industry, right? To sell more products. So that's just an example of lie, right? That comes and goes because obviously it's not sustainable. Then we've already known what universal truths have been about our health and food and beyond, which is now coming, you know, to a surface, which you know, stays and goes. But here's the deal. Then everything that you've ever thought of can be up-leveled by the next, you know, set of growth. And this is why I always say I'm not master at anything, because right. The minute you think that you've mastered something, the new sequence of growth will come. Yes. And this is when, you know, I thought that like keto diet was everything, right? I thought biohacking and all of this was like, that's good, right? And for about 5 years, it was amazing for me. You know, it was healing. It was great. But then I go into a dark room and they tell me that I don't have to eat at all. So it just, that just gives you an example of, you know, how you keep on leveling up in your belief system of what is possible.
I always say that to people, like, don't get too attached to anything, because it's like what you believe, which like you said, might really work for you now. And that belief system might be exactly what you need. So it's not a bad thing. But if you're too attached to it, you're totally preventing yourself from evolving. Because I mean, I look back to everything I've thought and it changes all the time. I'm curious, like going back to you now as like that kid, that entrepreneur, that person who always had the ability to shift even before you went deeper inside yourself. Do you think, again, and I'm still not going to let you, you're not getting away with not answering at least some cool shit you've done with your energetic system now, but we'll get there at some point. but do you think, like, I'm assuming, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming you've probably lived many, many lives prior to this and have had a lot of experience in many of these areas, because it does feel like you found stuff very quickly and your body went to stuff very quickly. So it's almost as if there was a knowing. We all have that knowing, but it feels like yours was very close to the surface. So do you feel like there was something in you that kind of already knew this up-leveling idea, this idea of let me not get too constrained with thought or the right way to do something? So even before you went into this dark room, even before you started doing all this, you were already kind of behaving that way, just in a more, you know, entrepreneurial version of it, where it was about like orange theory and then shifting here and then going there. But it always felt like you were not getting too tied down by your perceptions in the moment.
100%. So what's so important, it's this living in a constant surrender to the new opportunities with this open mind and an open heart. So that way you can build this level of discernment for yourself, right? What is your truth in a given moment? But, you know, for me, I'm never attached to anything. So even whenever I unhook, for example, right, I forget about anything that I'm doing on any level, because then it's time for me. So what we really have to start figuring out is that separation from everyone and everything, kind of like leave a little bit of room, but while you are in everything, that's the God's dichotomy, right? That we're operating in. And, you know, for me, I have always been, you know, driven by these thoughts, right? Because these thoughts usually for me in the early stages were depression and anxiety and pain and suicidal thoughts when I was 18, because I got chronic fatigue syndrome. I had a Epstein-Barr. I was literally sick every 2 weeks. And you know, at that time I wanted to be a professional athlete and I didn't have the health anymore to be able to, you know, support it. But my spiritual journey started really with my mother from early age, where we grew up with shaman. So you know, non-believing country after post-communism, where 95% were atheist in Czech, she was called to all of these things, which allowed me to, you know, start doing yoga. We were doing meditation in very, very young age.
Wow.
And at that time, I thought it was ridiculous and I didn't really take it. I took it for granted. But now I see it as a laying ground of foundation to, you know, believe in this. Now, when I was 17, I started my first business because I wanted to be able to cycle and I had to make the means to support, you know, very expensive sport. And so I start trading between Alibaba and eBay and I figure out a way how to start with nothing, basically shipped it from China directly to US or Europe. And that was my first business. Now, in this time, I was never for school. I my body could not comprehend. I have, you know, failed maths and everything because it was just not what I wanted to learn. And to please my father at that time, I ended up paying a friend to finish high school for me online to present as me throughout the whole time. And so I basically don't even have a high school, but...
Well, you do. It's just not you who didn't.
Yeah, whatever. I literally just sent a diploma to my dad to you know, make it all good. But here's the deal. All throughout this time, this is when I start reading Conversations with God, Power of Now. And I was guided to all of these mystical scriptures. And whenever I was going from the race to another race, we had a lot of time to, you know, to sit around and drive or fly. And so I would read and listen all of these books and I would start applying it into my cycling and I start applying it into, you know, my life. And what I've learned at that time, you know, most people reach for spiritual help or development when they hurt, but they don't realize that if they live that constantly, then they don't hurt, right? When we focus on things that are hard first, life becomes easy. When we constantly are living in this dopamine buzz of the quick, short gains, life can become hard. And so I continued studying and reading and went from workshop to workshop every time I had off time. And that's what gave me this foundation of tools to start understanding when things get hard. Okay, I got to first surrender. I got to move into my body. I got to connect to my breath. And then what is the choices that I'm going to make to change it? And something funny, I'm gonna sing for you and for everyone else. And this is what you do when shit hits the fan in your life. First thing first, you just simply sing this song. It is what it is, so what? Clap, clap, clap. And you have to do the little cha-cha at the end because that's how you affirm it. And here's the deal. So most people think, oh, so you just don't care, you know, you're careless. And it's the opposite. Yes, first, you do have to become... You surrender, right, to whatever's happening, but then you make the changes, not out of reaction, not out of just, you know, seeking quick change and quick, you know, whatever is happening. You first surrender, release, relax, and then you proactively, out of proaction, make the right, you know, decisions. And every situation that comes to you for you to re-see it anew. And cycles will keep on repeating in relationships, in your negative mind, in your self-worthiness. It will just keep on coming at you every time throughout the cycles until you realize that, oh my gosh, these are my lessons. And so this is like, ah, okay, so every moment, every situation, every relationship is an opportunity to become closer to who and what I am at the greatest expression. So now my life, I seek this thing because if I see something is wrong, right, or is not working within the ways I would like, I immediately look into it instead of out of it. And when I look into it, it grows, and it's a biofeedback or life feedback that is been gifted to us by universe to know if we're making the right choices or not.
So when you talk about like the biofeedback, but then going back to what you were talking about, kind of these two different paths, how you can get into a path that's not necessarily, it's, you know, the darker one, but you're getting biofeedback. Can you connect the dots for me there?
Yep. So actually, I'm going to take you through the me we be for a short moment. So that way, actually, people can right away see where they are in their life so they can, you know, revisit this. So I use something called the 4-step process to the journey through self-transformation. And essentially, the step one is waking up. So you first bring things to the surface that are not working. And I apply this process into the me, we, and be. So when it comes to me, you first figure out what is your physical health like, right? So you wake up. Do you sleep well? You know, how is your energy after you eat? Do you have any chronic pain, right? So you bring up a simple self-assessment, or you go to a doctor and you get your blood drawn, right? That doctor is going to get you, let's say you're high on environmental toxins and low on vitamin D, right? It gives you something to start with to wake up. This same thing can be applied to your mind. So you can think about what are all of the thoughts that I'm constantly having that I don't want to have, that are like not, you know, what I think of myself or another. And what I did with the mind specifically, I literally kept on writing down every time I had a negative thought about me or about another. Until I scratched it, I rewrote it, and I kept on rewriting and rereading it until that's how I start thinking about myself. So think about the mind as your software, the body as the hardware. And just like a computer, we download new software when we connect to the internet. Well, what we do, for example, in our experiences or when we go to meditation, breathwork, we connect to the inner net. So it allows us to hear what and adjust and assess, right, these things. So that's the mind-body connection, the first thing that is really important on this path. Then you've got your emotions. So same thing, you wake up from, you know, is it jealousy? Is it guilt? Is it fear? Is it sorrow? Is it apathy? Any negative emotions, you bring them up to the surface. You can write it down. And so that way, you know what you're working with. Now, this you can apply to relationships, career. I mean, it's literally anything, right? After you wake up, you then clean up, which is you got to let go of the old. So if you know that you've got, you know, high toxicity, right? You detox your body. If you know that your negative mind keeps on thinking you're not worthy of, you can't, you won't, well, you got to let that shit go, because that's otherwise what you're going to keep on, you know, curating. And let me tell you something. I used to be master at wanting to keep the old and also the new. And guess what? I was being Noah Aeon, highs and lows and good days and bad days. I kept on living in this constant tennis match, right, of highs and lows, that I was like, no, there must be another way. And that's the center, right? Going into the middle where you face these things, when you go into balance. So cleaning up is the second phase. The third phase is powering up. And this is when you go into offense. This is the most exciting part because you're in the driver's, you know, seat. You now know what you're working with. And this is when you supplement vitamin D. You bring new relationships, new emotions, new thoughts, you know, through these practices. And then the final one is resting up. And this is the process of unhooking I was talking about earlier, where you got to take time off. You got to be just with yourself. You got to revisit, reassess, because this thing keeps on, you know, growing and changing as your life cycles unfold.
That's amazing. And thank you for that. I appreciate that. When you, like how often, because it's so interesting, I'm thinking about that Burning Man vision you had, like, how often does that happen to you where you go somewhere and you're like, this is just not, does not feel energetically safe for me to be here?
It happens to me sometimes in events, in conferences, in restaurants. And
it's like a lot of people.
Yep. And what happens to me, it starts being almost like this anxiety, this little like tension. So when I was talking about the different senses, right, every single person is more prominent in one or the other. So you might be really strong empath and a hearer, right? You can hear it, or you might be more of a just intuitive, you know, knower, if I use that term. Mm-hmm. And so these senses will start kicking in and something just won't feel right. And I've gotten to a place where I've had to leave places because it becomes so loud now. So more open you become, right, louder it will be, all of these things that are not for your greatest good. And I get the fuck out.
I'm sure. That's so interesting. That's really interesting. Have you, when you said you saw kind of that vision at Burning Man and you left, which was smart, but you took with it kind of, how do you apply that paradigm of which you saw? How do you apply it to your everyday life now?
So what happens is, because when you start making your own choices, when you start taking the time to start, you know, doing this, you will less and less be off the path. And so the best way to explain this is, you know, 7-8 years ago, I would be learning through the gutter, right? So I would be learning through negative relationships and, you know, negative thoughts and anxieties and sickness, right? So like I continued to, that was my feedback, right, in life. And it is for a lot of people, which is why I'm coming back to this. So that way we can re-see that, right? But what happened to me after I start using the process of unhooking, I continue to be able to constantly hear and see and readjust. So what happens now, I very rarely, you know, have these type of people in my space or these type of experiences, because again, law of resonance. If there is not part of you that matches the frequency with the part of this experience, you're simply not going to attract it and it's not going to exist. This is why if you watch a lot of media and news and all you see is negativity and fear and, you know, no money and things, then guess what? That's what you're going to start bringing into your awareness. That's what you're going to think that's your belief system, and that's what you're going to attract to yourself or resonate into your, you know, state. So I don't watch this. I listen, I hear things that I want to hear, that I want to be nourished by. And that attracts this different level of resonance. So that way I don't have to learn through this anymore.
How, when you say unhooking, and you said it earlier, how you said, I don't bring any of like my work stuff there because it's time for me. But how do you actually do that?
So this is when, you know, tools and practices become handy. And this is when having and learning from teachers like yourself and you know, all of these magical beings around the world that are gifting this out is really crucial. Because when you go in there, and I'll give you example. So let's say that you do your 4 day per month, right? Let's say that you go on a vacation. And generally, the first 2 or 3 days are so hard to drop in. You know, we constantly feel the urge to be on our phones, to scroll on social media. It's because all of a sudden the mind doesn't have a food to continue, you know, eating. So don't get me wrong, there is a little withdrawal process. And what do? You do the exact opposite, right? So maybe you go on a walk, you go on a hike, you keep that mind occupied. So that way you can open up that channel of insights to start, you know, giving you these thoughts. And so for me, right, the medicine is dancing, is music, it's breath work, it's meditation, is hiking, exercise. Because, you know, if you ever had a really good yoga class, for example, you know, at the end, you feel all just blissed out, happy. And maybe you had a whole bunch of insights that came to you during the class. Well, guess what you did? You unhooked. So you allow this space to hear, to feel, to see. And that's what happens in these cycles, is you kind of have to break in through this constant thinking so you can get into that deep embodiment.
So how long, like, I mean, the withdrawal part's easy, but even like when you said you unhook at least for what, 1 hour, 2 hours a day, how in that, and I know your experience at this point, so try and like rewind to people who might be like, this is a great idea. How, I would think for a lot of people who, let's say, have crazy jobs or a full family or running around in the to-do list of what do the kids need and what do I need and what does my partner need? And then what do I have to get ready for that 8 a.m. meeting or whatever it is? how can you give them advice on how to get into that 1 hour of unhooking where it's actually beneficial? It's not them spent just fighting their brain.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you a perfect day that gives you an example of my day. All right. So that way, whatever people want to take away from it, you know, you apply whatever works and feels right for you. And if something, and by the way, I meant to tell this earlier. Anytime you have a butterflies, you're a little bit scared, like the unknown, that's the time that you really want to go in, because that means it's uncomfort zone, but it's a new change that will, you know, unfold. Now, I'll give you an example today. You know, I woke up in the morning around 6, and essentially, you know, before I went on the phone, I reached for, I used something called Neurovisor. It's a light therapy on your brain. And I'm trying to think where I have it. It's right here. And so basically it's a sequence of light. Ooh. That you just put on, and what it does, it brings you straight into the present moment because of the light. It helps the monkey brain to, you know, release, and you know, part of this, right, because we are living in this fast-paced world, I start looking for these different tools that can help people, you know, get rid of the mind even faster. And so, for example, this is one of it. So what I do on it, I first choose dehabituation of beta, the overly thinking mind, because what happens is you wake up, your adrenaline spikes, and your monkey brain starts kicking in. What it normally does is like, what am I supposed to do? I have to do this, that. And let's say that you first thing you go on your cell phone and you start going through your notifications, right? And let's say that one of the notifications is like, I don't know, account below zero or something happened in, you know, at work. And you immediately go into fight or flight. You tense up your body, you stop breathing properly. And then the entire day you're building like this. So that's exactly what you don't want, right? So instead, before I do any of this, I first go into slow, subtle observing of my breath. I use something called instant presence, which is 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out, in and out your nose. It's been, you know, validated by science to lower down your stress, increase your heart rate variability. And so it brings you into coherence. So you observe your breath. Then you observe your body's awareness in a relaxed state. And my favorite thing to ask is, where am I? Because if you are in the past, in the future, or on your phone, you're an extension of you. So it's like, where am I right now? And if I'm anywhere else than in full body, then I am not in this moment, right? So I observe my body in a relaxed state. And if it helps you, you can imagine champagne-like bubbles bubbling up around your body, and just inhale through the bubbles, exhale out the bubbles. And sometimes I even, you know, imagine like I inhale love right from within, and I exhale love out without, which then goes into, you know, the frequency that I want to be in for the day. The third tool of instant presence is, can you pay attention to the stillness and silence underneath the noise? So you could be in a music festival and still be aware of your breath, your body's awareness, and stillness and silence underneath the sound, underneath the noise. That will bring you instantly into presence, and it allows for your body to not go into that overly thinking, high beta brainwave state. Now, after I'm like, okay, I got this, right? I'm relaxed, I'm good, you know, I have it under control. Then I move into a series of breathing, usually 3 to 4 rounds of breath. And then at the end of it, I still spend some more time on just breathing, guiding. You know, there's so many different tools that I use. And by the way, I can share a free on-demand library with this. So that way people actually can have it, you know, from home.
Great. Love it.
And then you can just choose, you know, whichever recording you want. After that, I do a little bit of a visualization. So I visualize the day. What are the most important meetings? Is there a flight? And I just kind of send how I want it to be. So I literally just imagine exactly the perfect outcome. You know, this is that. So I then get the nervous system ready for everything that's, you know, to come before it ever happens and how I want it to happen. Then I do a little bit of a physical exercise because it takes about 30 seconds of strain. It could be a push-up, it could be a plank, it could be, you know, just anything that you raise your heart rate. So that way I can set my body into a fat-burning mode. So that way that hunger, that initial,
you say it like, only takes 30 seconds,
you know, goes away. It turns into energy. And then, you know, maybe I do shakes, jumps. I mean, you know, at my house, I have a full biohacking lab with, you know, sauna, vibration and everything, which obviously, you know, nowadays is becoming available, you know, in many cities. And then, you know, I go about the day, give kisses to the loved ones and, you know, work for about 5 to 6 hours. In that, I want to come back to the instant presence as frequently as possible. So whenever you're talking, whenever you're listening, see if you can go back to the breath, body awareness, and stillness and silence, because then everything becomes much more heightened. Your awareness becomes so much, you know, greater. Midday, I usually do a little 10 to 20 minute reset. And that could be, again, I have a specific breath work for it or just a little activation. Sometimes, by the way, in the morning, I also exercise, right? So I fit that in depending on the days. And this way, I break the day around and I, again, unhook a little bit to come back into it. Usually, best time is right after lunch. So if you're eating lunch, then you can tend to get a little tired digesting anyway. So use that tiredness to go into that, you know, alpha, theta brain waves where you can restore. And then at the end of the day, I basically, you know, lay down in my bed and I start thinking back whatever happened through the day. And I literally revisit this. Now, this got two different benefits. One benefit, whenever you start visualizing, it brings you into theta, into that subconscious mind. And theta is one step away from delta, which is the sleeping mind. So it actually helps you start being able to, you know, fall asleep. Now, I focus on different breathing again. And whenever I go back in time about the most important things, I start calling my energy back. So I literally stated, I'm calling all of my energy back from all the people, all the places, whatever I've left it. Because throughout the day, right, we extend our energy on our phones and computers. So you bring back what belongs to you. Then I reverse it. I am sending all of the energy back to all the people and places that have left it on me. So that way you go into sleep with you as you are without anybody's, you know, energy. Then I pass out and I repeat.
And are you a big dreamer now?
Yes and no. So because I travel constantly, sometimes with the time changes, the sleep is my biggest opportunity for growth in general. You know, I travel 150 days out of the year, so crazy. It's not always ideal, but otherwise, yes, a lot of lucid dreaming, especially in meditation and breath work.
Amazing. So thank you for that. I think that's a huge gift. So I appreciate that. And I think a lot of people will take stuff from there. What do you feel like? And then I'll let you go, because I know I've had you for a while. What has been the biggest gift of all these changes? Because again, you were from the outside perspective of people who live the day to day in today's society, you had a great gift. Like you were just very successful at a young age, doing well. So what was the biggest gift you received in kind of going deeper into yourself and just changing your relationship with yourself energetically?
The biggest gift was to come back to myself. You know, because I used to be so hard on myself and, you know, for being perfect and just being so hard. And it comes from that athlete mindset, right? And even in the business, right? I like did the same thing. I would just, it was almost like a stage race every time I would be building the new company, which on the one hand, right, I was able to build so fast. But on the other hand, I was losing myself in the process. So really, gifting myself the fact that I am okay as I am. I am, you know, worthy of, I am fine. I mean, all of this worthiness was such a big deal because, you know, our mind just keeps on wanting to compete, right? And being bigger and better and higher. And so that piece of just reflection that like, you are just fine the way you are today was this beautiful, you know, feeling of acceptance.
Do you think you had to lose all your money to get there?
Unfortunately, I did, yes. And not everybody has to. I think this is one of the biggest point is that you can start listening. And when you start listening, sooner you start listening, sooner you can make these changes. So you know, this, by the way, shows you how much I wasn't willing to pay attention, you know? Mm-hmm. And that honestly is much bigger unsuccess in the success I've had. Because what we call success, right, is money and fame and whatever our egos do. But imagine who I was. Like, I wasn't a good person, right? I was a capitalist and I was wanting to grow. And like, is that success? Like, I don't think so, you know? Mm-hmm. So now I feel successful because I feel love and I feel love for others and I get to be in service. And that to me is so much greater success than anything I've ever achieved.
That's so beautiful. May I ask, when you met your partner now, was there an instant knowing? Like, now that you are, and how is it different for you than in the past?
Well, yes, we instantly were in trouble when we met. And it's funny because she met me when I was at the lowest. I literally had every single account frozen below zero. And she fed me at the, you know, at first. I mean, she literally paid for my food, for my kids to help me out in this process. So when she met me, I was literally at the worst. Like, I've never had a bigger low. And she still liked me, which I was like, I don't know how, but somehow she still sees that there is, you know, a bigger aspect. So when we start becoming successful, oh my gosh, life became that much easier, that much more love. And I think it was such an important factor, because then, you know, that humble heart was the foundation of, you know, who we were. Not this, you know, millionaire that's flying private jets, that's wanting to open the next Orange Theory, you know?
Right. No, that's sweet. That's really sweet. Well, I mean, thank you for sharing so much beautiful insight. Thank you for everything you do. Good luck. I know that you're squeezing us in amongst like a whole week of crazy events. So keep serving, keep doing. Hopefully we can chat again. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for what you're doing. It's so important in this world to have this beautiful foundation. So on behalf of everybody that's listening to you, thank you for all your work as well.
Thank you. You're so sweet. Have a beautiful day. I'm going to go disconnect and do my hour or two. I'm learning.
Yes. Yes.
Unhooking. You're great. I'm going to take the unhooking and live by it.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.